This is Radio High Country News. I'm Adam Burke. In 1973, when a trapper killed a lynx near Vail, Colorado, it marked the last confirmed sighting of the cat in the state. That is until Colorado started a reintroduction program 4 years ago to bring the lynx back. Currently, there are 60 or so lynx known to be roaming the state's mountains. Earlier this spring, Chrissy Clark went out with two lynx trackers to see how the animals and the program are doing. She has this report.
In early March, when the snow was still deep on the mountains, a lynx made his way unseen along the slopes of Colorado's San Juan Range. Picture him as the embodiment of alpine wildness: gold eyes, tawny fur, sharp teeth, long gangly legs with retractable claws. And he sounds like this. At least, that's what he sounds like to Todd Bayless and Brandon Barr, two lynx tracking technicians for the Colorado Division of Wildlife. On this day, they're tracking 931. He's one of the 128 radio-collared lynx brought down here from Canada since 1999 under a state reintroduction program, and he's left a set of perfect paw prints in the snow.
These are nice and fresh. You can see what I was talking about how they spread their toes out really wide. They barely sink at all compared to us.
We stay a few miles behind 931, far enough not to disturb him, but close enough so that the tracks are fresh, and we follow the animal's every move. Trackers spend 10 to 12 hours a day slogging up steep slopes through thickets of willows, wandering around tree trunks in circles, stooping down to sniff logs. It feels a little like lynx boot camp. But then something happens.
So we've got a little action here.
The action Todd Bayless is referring to is a still and quiet grove of trees with a few faint impressions in the snow. To the untrained eye, it doesn't look like much. But to Bayless, it's the first signs of a chase between a lynx and its favorite food, a snowshoe hare. Bayless immediately begins following the evidence.
We're about 11 bounds into this chase now already. And you have to imagine the hare's in front of the cat at this time. And they're running down this hill together, and we'll see. We got to keep going to see if he caught him or not.
The answer comes after 39 bounds, in the form of a single drop of blood at the base of a fallen log. A few feet away, we find a mound of snow with claw marks all over it. Bayless stoops down and starts digging.
What else do we have in here? There we go. Some guts, some toes. They don't like the toes. They'll save those for last.
These buried remnants are the leftovers that lynx often leave behind after a hunt. Bayless and Barr take meticulous notes on the site's location, altitude, slope, snow depth, and forest type.
Some alpine fur over.
The field research that these tracking teams compile is all part of a grand experiment to see if lynx can make a comeback in Colorado. After 4 years, the state reintroduction program has already gone through some difficult growing pains. In the beginning, 96 animals were trapped and shipped from Canada at roughly $4,000 a pop and released into southern Colorado, one of the most remote parts of the state. But little was known about exactly how to conduct the releases. The animals had a rough time making a living, and 45 have already died. Many starved to death, some were hit by cars, still others were shot by people.
We had to learn as we went, and there were some difficult lessons to learn in the beginning.
Colorado Division of Wildlife biologist Tanya Schenk is in charge of tracking and monitoring the reintroduced lynx. Hers has not been an easy job. Her program has been the target of lawsuits, protests, and angry editorials. Critics have questioned the competence and the integrity of Schenk and her co-workers. Still, Tanya Schenk has nothing but wide-eyed wonder about the lynx themselves, from the way they hunt to the strange growls they make at night.
I can't imitate the sound, but they have quite a variety of sounds that they'll make, from a low growl to almost a screeching sound.
These days, Schenk says they have a handle on the mortality issues and fewer lynx are dying. But there's another even more pressing concern: reproduction. Without kittens, a viable lynx population in the state is doomed. Tanya Schenk's theory is that lynx numbers aren't high enough for the animals to meet and breed in the 4,000 square mile area.
We have a low density of animals out there right now, And I think we have to increase the densities of lynx out there and try to get some sort of stable social structure out there and see if that's what's holding back reproduction.
Last summer, Tanya Shank made her case for importing more lynx to southern Colorado. She had to convince a skeptical state wildlife commission to go ahead with the project. She also had to question her own intentions.
I had to sit down and ask myself, do I think there's enough chance that this effort is going to succeed that I would put individual animals through the trauma and the stress of being brought down here and released in a new landscape? And I'm optimistic.
The state okayed the plan. In April, state biologists released 32 more lynx into the San Juans, and they have authority to release up to 130 more in the next 4 years.
Biologists on the ground are doing the right thing.
Rob Edward is the director of carnivore restoration for the environmental group Sinopu. He applauds the state agency's commitment to lynx reintroduction.
This is a model program for state action on recovering species.
But with lynx not reproducing, Edward says it's hard to forget the questions that lynx advocates were asking about the program 4 years ago. Questions about habitat and food supplies, questions about whether the southern part of Colorado had enough snowshoe hare populations, which make up 70% of the lynx's diet in the winter.
There may be better places than the South San Juans, perhaps near Vail, where the last lynx was sighted back in the 70s, and yet those sites really weren't given fair consideration.
Vail Resorts owns and operates 4 of the dozen or so ski resorts that make up the heart of Colorado's multi-billion-dollar ski industry. They're clustered along Interstate 70, which runs west from Denver into the state's central mountains. It's widely accepted that these mountains are prime lynx habitat with some of the highest snowshoe hare populations in Colorado. But the presence of lynx near Vail could severely restrict the activities and expansion of the ski resort. Over the years, critics have speculated that state politics kept the Central Mountains off the table for lynx reintroduction. And the $200,000 that Vail contributed to the state program was interpreted by some as a payoff. Again, Rob Edward.
If the ski industry along the I-70 corridor didn't exist, the considerations for where lynx were to be reintroduced may have played out differently. I can't say that for sure, but seeing how the politics played out in the late 1990s, it's very interesting.
Vail was unavailable to comment for this report. State officials deny the allegations, and environmental groups like Rob Edwards have largely left those controversies behind. But some people are still willing to suggest that such political maneuvers have contributed to the lynx program's current woes. Mark Beckoff is a carnivore biologist at the University of Colorado at Boulder. He says state officials put politics over biology when they decided to locate the animals in southern Colorado, where there were fewer economic conflicts but less prime habitat.
I wish they just would have been more open about it. I mean, I just wish they would have just said, we're putting them there because if they go into Vail, Vail can't develop. Vail gave us money. It was so obvious. It was sickening.
Beckoff credits the leaders of the lynx program for making the best out of a difficult situation. But he says they might be ignoring the real reason lynx aren't reproducing.
At some point, they're going to have to bite the bullet if there's no reproduction. It's possible that they're not reproducing because the animals don't meet one another. It's also possible there's just not enough food so they don't get the energy to go through the reproductive cycles.
Beckoff also suggests that the desire of lynx advocates to restore a vanished species may exceed the animal's ability to survive in an altered landscape. He calls this desire redecorating nature.
You know, you move an animal from here to there. Oh, wouldn't the couch look better in another room? Wouldn't this lynx look better in Colorado? But they don't take into account the reality of the enormous messes that humans have made.
The only ones who can really answer Beckoff's challenges are the lynx themselves. So the state biologists and tracking teams are listening to the animals in the best way they know how, by paying close attention to the wildcat's every move and accumulating a mountain of data. From what he's seen on the ground, tracker Todd Bayless is optimistic.
If they're able to find each other and mate, odds are really good that they're going to have kittens and we're going to have real live wild lynx born in Colorado.
And Bayless adds, while there are no signs yet of lynx kittens in southern Colorado, there are plenty of signs that the animals are socializing.
You'll start to see tracks coming together, and basically what you can imagine, cats having fun out there. I probably...
For Radio High Country News, I'm Chrissy Clark in southwestern Colorado.
A lot of times you'll see it's really evident signs of mating, like
wine glasses,
candles. You'll see
cigarette butts,
and, you know, used condoms.